Say good morning. Let's begin. So for today's daf is daf test. We have a number of sponsorships this morning. First of all, to sponsor the Ili Nishmas, the four soldiers who were killed in the Operation Protective Edge, two over the course of Shabbos and two on Matzei Shabbos. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, their neshamos will have an aliyah. And also sponsored by Reuven Goodman, in dedication or in commemoration of the yahrzeit of his father, Kalman Chaim Ben Avram, Zichron Levrach, we hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, his neshamos will have an aliyah. Okay. To also thank Mati Margalit for dedicating, for sponsoring the Ragalach. In commemoration of the art site, it's even written on a pastry box, of his grandmother, Sarah Bas Yosef Shlomo. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, her neshama will have an aliyah. To thank David Brenner for his sponsorship in honor of the soldiers of Tzahal. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, they will have incredible siyata d'shmai and success in all of their endeavors. And to thank Noah Fine for sponsoring. I believe that the exact wording was for no specific reason. And we thank Noah for his sponsorship, and we take the opportunity now to welcome Noah back from Eretz Yisrael, celebrating his sister's Eliana's bat mitzvah. It's always a pleasure to have Noah with us in the shir. And I believe is covered everyone. I got everyone. All right, good. So we'll say today's daf is daf test. We're going to pick up at the Mishnah on Ches Amud Beis. Says the Mishnah, Ein bein svarim letfilin mezuzos. There is no distinction between svarim and tefillin mezuzos. Now remember again, Svarim in this context, Rashi points out, means Tornavim Uksivim, Tsukuksuvim. Obviously, they're writing everything within scroll form. So the idea over here is you'd be writing a scroll of Torah, a scroll of Nevi'im, a scroll of Tana, a scroll of Ksuvim. So there's no distinction between Svarim, Tefillin, and Mezuzos, except Elo, Shasvarim Nechtavim Mechaloshim. Svarim can be written in any language. So meaning what the Mishnah seems to be saying is, you can write scrolls of Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim in any language you want. Tefillin, and Mezuzos, and Nechtavos, Elo, Ashuris. However, again, Tefillin, and Mezuzos can only be written in Ashuris. Now, Ashuris refers to over here, again, a specific script, specific Hebraic script, and also meaning in Hebrew. It cannot be written in any other language. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, "Af b'svarim lo etiru shiichtuvu el yivanos." Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, even when it comes to svarim, you can't write it in any language. The only other language you're allowed to write it besides Lashon HaKodesh is Greek. Says the Gemara, "Halatofram begidin ulatami esaydam zev zeshavin." But yet we see is that when it comes to scrolls of Tanakh and Tefillin and Mezuzos, they share the same halachos in that what? You must go ahead and bind the different sections of parchment together with animal sinews. That is a halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai. That if you ever wonder, you know, how is it that these sections of parchment and a Sefer Torah remain together? So obviously it's not any kind of paste, it's not any kind of glue, and it's not simply a fabric, thread, but rather it's what's called gidin, sinews. That is halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai, and that applies both. That applies both to tefillin as well as tefillin mezuzos, meaning tefillin mezuzos is not really shayach as much because, again, we end up writing it on one piece of parchment. But technically speaking, were you to need to go ahead and sew different pieces of parchments together, you'd have to do that with gidin. And for the Mu'la Tamas Adayim, the idea that, remember, touching sacred scrolls conveys ritual impurity to hands, so that applies both by svarim as well as tefillin mezuzos. And we saw, again, there are two reasons for that. Reason number one had to do, we saw with the truma, we spoke about that last week, that people used to throw the truma in the Aron Kodesh, again with scrolls, in order, and again the mice got into the truma and started nibbling at the scrolls as well. So in order to go ahead and avoid that, they started saying, Chazal said, that whoever touches a scroll, their hands become ritually impure. If your hands are ritually impure, if you touch truma, you could end up disqualifying the truma, which of course creates a financial loss. The other reason, we'll actually see this later on in the Gemara, that the halacha is that you're not supposed to touch. It's a very important halacha. You are not supposed to touch the parchment of a Sefer Torah. You're not supposed to touch the parchment directly. You could touch it with your talis, you could touch it with the yad, but you're not supposed to touch it with your hands. And that's all because of the sanctity of the scroll itself. In order that Chazal make that point, so Chazal said, if you do touch the scroll, what happens? Your hands become tamei. Says the Gemara, v'sar mechtam v'cholashon, but yet again, scrolls of Torah Nevi'im and Ksuvim can be written in all languages. Or minu, the Gemara raises the kasha, mikra shekasuv targum, v'targum shekasuv mikra. So we'll say, if you write, now mikra shekasuv targum literally means over here, if you take Hebraic wording and you write it in Aramaic, Or Targum, you take Aramaic, Shekasu Mikra, and you write it in Hebrew. Look at Rashi just a moment. Mikra Shekasu Targum, for example. Sefer Shekasu B'Lashon HaKodesh. Haro'i Lichtov Bo Mikra Kasov Lashon Arami. So I took a Sefer that should have been written in Lashon HaKodesh, and instead I wrote it in Aramaic. Or Targum, Shahaya Ro'i Lichtov Bo Targum. Let's say for something, I had something that was Aramaic. Now, where would you have something that's supposed to be Aramaic? Rashi says, Kigon Yigar Sahadusa. Remember, again, when Laban and Yaakov make a treaty not to go ahead and pass a certain line, so they called that line of demarcation, Laban called it Yigar Sahadusa, Yaakov called it Galeid. So if, let's say, instead of writing Yigar Sahadusa, you wrote Galeid, you wrote Galeid. So Lamai said that's called Targum Shekasva Mikra, or for that matter, Uksav Ivri. Both say Uksav Ivri is Hebrew, but it's a different type of Hebraic script. So if you would try to scroll like this, such a scroll does not go ahead and convey Tumah to the hands. And I will say, saying that such a scroll does not convey Tumah to the hands is another way of saying what? That it's not a bona fide, it's just not a bona fide sefer. It's not a, again, remember, this is not a din impasul or tar, because remember, again, you're not talking about necessarily writing Sfarim a sefer Torah per se, but the idea is it doesn't have the din of a sefer. Doesn't have a din of a sefer. However, ad shichtavenu b'ksav, ashuris al sefer b'dio. A sefer is only considered to be a sefer when you write ksav ashuris, suppose that means like the Hebraic script that you see, the Hebraic print that you see in a sefer today, that's called ksav ashuris. You have to write ashuris al sefer, parchment u'b'dio, black ink. Amar Rava, suppose say, interestingly enough, this contradicts the Mishnah, because the Mishnah said that you can write svarim in any lashon you want. And yet the Braisa clearly says that what? You cannot. To which the Gemara says, "Amar Rav lo kasha." Rav says, "Not a kasha." Top of test. Kan begufan shalanu. Kan begufan shalohen. I will say, listen to this. Rashi says, "Kan begufan shalanu." Masnisin diktanim bichaloshon. Our Mishnah that says that you can write from in any language. Shaloshina es haksav elo shashina es haloshon. Our Rav say, what's the case over here? The case of the Mishnah says that you can write a sefer in any language. What does that mean? You could take savashuris. And essentially, you could transliterate another language using ksav ashuris. So if I were to go ahead, interesting, and write a Sefer Torah in English, let's say, but using what? Using Hebrew words, then technically speaking, I can go ahead and do that. Now we'll see, that's not halacha lemaisa, that's the Mishnah suggesting. So if you use, again, the ksav ashuris letters, that's the Mishnah says, you can write it any language you want. Kan begufan shalahen. The Braisa that says that if you write the Sefer in another language, that it's not going to be kosher. Bless you. That refers to what? That refers to when you're using someone else's alphabet. That refers to if you're actually writing, let's say, a Sefer Torah using English letters. That's when the Sefer would not be good. So the Gemara says, if that's the case, my irya mikra shakaswa targum, v'targum shakaswa mikra. Then why do you have to go ahead and phrase this as a case of mikra Hebrew that was written in Aramaic, or Aramaic that was written in Hebrew? Filu mikra shekasum mikra, v'targu shekasum targum. Then again, if it's a question of which lettering you're using, then it could even be a case of Hebrew that was written in Hebrew, or for that matter, Aramaic that was written in Aramaic. Because again, according to this answer now, it's not a din in what? It's not a din in the language. What is it a din in? But the letters to which the Gemara says, "Targum shekasu nami, targum shekasu v'targum nami dohakatani at shiichtevu ashuris ala sefer b'dio." Meaning, what the Braisa seems to indicate is that what is that lemaisa? What's most important is that it be written in ashuris on parchment with black ink. Ela lo kashas. Therefore, the Gemara is also, remember what we're trying to do over here. We're trying to reconcile the Braisa and the Mishnah. Because the Mishnah seemed to indicate that Lamaisa, you could write Svarim in any language. The Braisa seemed to indicate that what? That you may not write Svarim in any language. You could only write Svarim Ashuris, Besefer, Bidio. So how do we reconcile these two? So the first one we wanted to suggest is maybe it's talking about usage of different alphabets, different lettering. The Mishnah is talking about using Ashuris, just using Ashuris with different languages. And the Braisa is talking about using other alphabets. The other alphabets will not be good. The Gemara now disproved that approach. Therefore, the Gemara gives another answer. Elokasha, Harabban Harab Shimon Gamliel. Two different opinions. One is the Rabban was Rab Shimon Gamliel. Both remember, Rab Shimon Gamliel, look at Rashi. Rab Shimon Gamliel, the Palig Ad Rabbanon B'mas Nisan. Remember again, Rab Shimon Gamliel was the one in the Mishnah who argued on the Tanakama. Tanakama, the Rabbanon said that you could write a sefer in any language. Rav Shimon Gamliel said you can only write a sefer in what other language? In Greek. So maybe Lamai said that's there between the Brice and the Mishnah, to which the Gemara says, Irab Shimon Gamliel, Ha Ika Yevanis. So what the Gemara is suggesting over here is that maybe the Brisa reflects the view of Rav Shimon Gamliel. And Rav Shimon Gamliel is taking the hard stand and saying, no, you can't write Sfarim in any other language, only Ashuris, only Basefer, and only Bidio. The Gemara says that can't be. Why? Because Rav Shimon Gamliel already says in the Mishnah that what? That although he's not as permissive in his license to translate, but he does allow for translation into what? Translation into Greek, to which the Gemara says, El alo kashya, kan besvarim, kan betulim mezuzos. Oh, to which the Gemara answers, you're right. The truth is, the Braisa is not referring to svarim. Rather, the Braisa is referring to what? Tefillin and mezuzos, right? The Brice is saying that lemaisa, only tefillin and mezuzos can only go ahead and be written with ashuris ala sefer ubidio. But the Mishnah that gives the more extensive or the greater license is talking about what? It's talking about svarim. So the Gemara says tefillin and mezuzos my time. So why is it that tefillin and mezuzos can only be written in ashuris? In Ashurus and in Hebrew, Mishum Dichsev Behu, because it says by Tzolom Mezuzos, V'hayu Hadvarim Ha'ila Sharnochi Mitzavecha Hayom Alevavecha. So what do we direction from V'hayu? And it shall be, or they shall be, Yehu V'hayu B'hav Yasson Yehu. They should remain in the state in which they are. Meaning what? That when it comes to Tzolom Mezuzos, you dafka have to write them in Hebrew, in Ashuris. You cannot translate them into any other language, but by other Sfarim, you have a little bit more leeway. You may translate them into other languages. So the Gemara says, My Targum Shekasva Mikra Ika. So now let's analyze this. So now what you're telling me is, remember how the Braisa read. So the Braisa said if you had Mikra, Shekasva Targum, if you had Hebrew, but you translated into Aramaic, or you had Aramaic, and you translated it into Hebrew, so that's not good. The Gemara is suggesting now that that's Tafka referring to Tefillin and Mezuzos. So the Gemara says, My Targum Shekasva Mikra Ika. Where are you going to find the case of Aramaic that would be written in Hebrew? Bishlama Torah Ika Yigar Sahadusa. So I understand by the Torah there's a case of where you could write something in Aramaic and Hebrew. That's the case of Yigar Sadusa, we just mentioned before by Yaakov and Lavan. Elahacha, but by Tefillin and Mezuzos, my Targum Ika. What Targum is there? Meaning, I understand what's happening over here. We're trying to reinterpret the Braisa. The Braisa had a very narrow view. The Braisa said that you may not write Mikra Shekasva, or if you wrote Mikra Shekasva Targum, or Targum Shekasva Mikra, it's not good. We're now explaining that that's Dafka referring to Tefillin and Mezuzos. So the Gemara says, how could it be referring to Tefillin and Mezuzos? What Aramaic is there by Tefillin and Mezuzos that you could potentially write in Hebrew? There's no Aramaic. The only Aramaic that exists is Yigar Sahadusa. Maybe the one other example of that in the Torah is maybe the word Totafos, which is not necessarily Aramaic, but Rashi seems to indicate is made up of different dialects, made up from different languages. But in the Parashos of Tefillin and Mezuzos, there is no Aramaic that could potentially be Hebraicized. So therefore, again, that can't be the interpretation of the Braisa. Elolokashya, Kan B'Megillah, Kan B'Sfarim. Oh, so therefore the Gemara says, you're right. What is the Braisa referring to? The Braisa is referring to Megillah. And the Braisa is saying that essentially Megillah has to be written Ba'ashuris in Hebrew, ala sefer on parchment with Dio. You cannot write the Megillah in any other language. When it comes to Torah, when it comes to Nevi'im, when it comes to Ksuvim, you may write those in other languages as long as what? You're written in Ashuris letters, you're written in Hebrew letters, but by Megillah, you may not go ahead and write it in another language. So the Gemara says, my time, what's the reason by Megillah that you can't write it in another language? Because it says in the Megillah, Kich Savam V'chil Shonam. Then I both say, there's a major kasha on this, because interestingly enough, this has to do, again, with the decrees that were sent out to the various parts of Ahasuerus' kingdom. And in this context, interestingly enough, Kech Savam and Kel Shana means what? That each one got in their own language. So, okay, we're not going to get into that kasha now. But the Gemara, interestingly enough, is using this pasuk as a raya to say that what? Megillah can only be written in Ashuris, in Hebrew, used in Hebrew language, Hebrew letters on parchment, and while leaving the parchment on the Yoah side. So the Gemara says, okay, so now what we've just done is we've established that Lemaisa, the Brice is not contradicting the Mishnah. Because the Mishnah, when it gives you the right to go ahead and translate into other languages, that's Dafka talking about Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim. The Brice, when it says you may not translate into another language, that's Dafka referring to what? Dafka referring to Megillah. Megillah may not be translated into another language, Kichsavam, Vechil Shanam. So the Gemara says, oh, by the way, what is the Targum? In order for this answer to work, there must be parts of the Megillah that are Aramaic words, technically Aramaic words, and therefore, again, the Gemara, the Brice is telling me that I may not translate those Aramaic words into Hebrew. Where is there Aramaic in the Megillah? My Targum Shekasra Mikra'ika. Where is the Aramaic in the Megillah? Amra Papa, the Nishma Piskam HaMelech. Literally, the decree of the king was heard. Now, I will say, Pitgam, interestingly enough, the Gemara is suggesting has now been a word that has been conscripted into the Hebrew language, but is not etymologically Hebrew, right? In fact, again, its etymology is actually Aramaic. Is Aramaic, because again, pitgam is a modern Hebrew word that's used for an expression, a saying, but again, its origins are Aramaic. So you see this Aramaic in the Megillah. Nachma Yitzchak Amar, v'chol anashim yitnu yikar lebaleihen. Now, yikar in this context means what? Covet, honor. So again, yikar also is an Aramaic word, and therefore, again, the Megillah, you see over here, the Megillah is Aramaic, and therefore, again, the halacha is that the Megillah must be written in its original form and may not be translated into a different language. Ravashi says, again, Ravashi gives another answer. Kitanya hahi bishar svarim. When was this written? When is this brisa true? Bishar svarim, Ravashi says, b'nevim uksuvim. Rabbi Yehuda hi, and it's Rabbi Yehuda. What does Rabbi Yehuda say? Disanya. Tefillin u'mezuzos inichtavn ela ashuris. Tefillin u'mezuzos could only be written in ashuris, only written in Hebrew. V'rabasinu hitiru yivanis. But the rabbis allowed, now what the Gemara seems to be saying is that the rabbis allowed Tefillin Mezuzos to be written in Greek. Is that true? V'haksiv v'hayu. But it's not true. How can you write Tefillin Mezuzos in Greek? We already established before that the word v'hayu means what? V'avyosan yuhu. That Tefillin Mezuzos must only be written in Hebrew. Ele'ema sfarim nechtavim b'cholashom. Rather, it means like this. The Tanakhama holds that sfarim, meaning scrolls of Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim, can be written in any language. The rabbis allowed you to translate sfarim into Greek. Michlal de Tanakhama aser. That seems to indicate that, meaning if the rabbis have to permit it, that seems to indicate that what? That the Tanakhama prohibited it. Rather, no. Ela ima, rabosinu lo hitiru shiichtavu ela yivanis. So we'll say what we have over here is something very interesting. Apparently, the Tanakhama's of the opinion that you can, in fact, translate Svarim into any language you want. Into any language you want. The Rabbanon have a narrower view and say that what? You may only translate it into what? Only into Greek, for reasons we'll see in just a little bit. At V'tanya, Rabbi Yehuda, Av kishyeti rabosenu yivanis. And now, again, we're going to narrow the scope even a little bit more. So, once again, the Tanakhama's most expansive opinion that says that you could translate Svarim, and Svarim means what? Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim into what? Into what? Any language, okay? The Rabbanon come along and say what? You can only translate it into Greek. Now, I'll say, what is everybody agreeing on? What does everybody agree on? Tefillin and mezuzos. That tefillin and mezuzos could only be what? Ashuris. So that everybody agrees with. The only machlokis is about Svarim. Now comes on Rabbi Yehuda and says, oh, and when the Rabbanon allowed you to translate Svarim into Greek, lo yetiru ela b'sefer Torah, umishum ma'asa d'tami ha-melech. When the rabbis allowed you to translate into Greek, they only allowed you to translate what? Sifrei Torah into Greek, not Nevi'im and Ksuvim. And why is that? Because the episode with Talmi ha-melech. What happened with King Talmi? Now I will say, just so you should know, King Talmi was one of the generals of Alexander the Great. Remember, again, Alexander the Great dies without a male heir. So when he dies, his kingdom is divided up among his strongest generals, and Talmi was one of those generals. So Talmi took control of most of the Middle East. So the Gemara tells a story. Master the Talmi Amelech, Tisanya, Master the Talmi Amelech. There was a story with King Talmi. Shekines Shivim Ushnaim Zekenim. He assembled 72 elders. V'chnisam b'shivim u'shnayim batim. And he put them in 72 different locations. V'lo gila lahem ama kinsan. He did not tell them why he was sequestering them. V'nichnas etzel kol echad v'echad v'amr lahem kisvuli toras Moshe rabchem. And what did he want? See, I will say, before this time, there existed no comprehensive translation of the Torah. Remember, the Greeks, this, just so you should understand, this actually was not anti-Semitic. It's actually not anti-Semitic. This was Greek culture was all about assimilating other cultures as well. It's actually interesting. The Greeks had an incredible respect for other cultures, and so they wanted to learn. So literally, Tami HaMelech wanted to know, you have this Torah, it's this great body of knowledge, what does it say in it? There was never before this a translation of the Torah. And we'll say, this is what has become to known as the Septuagint, or before Google, right? The Septuagint, right? This is the Septuagint, the 72 elders, ultimately, and this became the first major translation of the Torah. And I will say, amazingly enough, Nasan HaKadosh Baruch Hu B'leid Kol Echad Ve'Echad Eitzah, this Kimo Kulon L'Dea Achos. I will say, now you understand the problem with translating the Torah. Problem with translating the Torah is what? That Torah Shebichsav is only understandable with what? With Torah Shebaal Peh. If you're just translating the verses of the Torah directly, you could very easily end up with a very skewed misunderstanding. Now, Talmi was not interested in Torah Shebaal Peh. Talmi was interested in Torah Shebichsav. So, bless you. So now there was going to be a major potential for Chilul Hashem over here, because if you translate certain psukim literally, again, you end up with a flawed existence. So again, listen to this Gemara. There was a miracle, and remember, all 72 of these men were sequestered independently, individually. What was the miracle? That they all made the same exact changes. All made the same exact changes. And now the Gemara tells us the changes. This is amazing. The Kassel, for example, first change was Ha'elokim bara bereshis. Remember, how does the pasuk read? Bereshis bara Elokim. Now I will say again, you could easily mistake that to mean bereshis. There's this entity called bereshis, this thing called bereshis bara Elokim. It created God. In order to avoid that type of misunderstanding, they all changed Elokim bara bereshis. God created in the beginning. Next, Ase Adam Betzalim Abedimus. Remember, how does the pasuk read? Na'ase Adam Betzalmenu Kidmusenu. Let us make man in our form and in our image. Now again, remember, Rashi HaKadosh quotes the Gemara that says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu realized that the creation of man would engender certain animosity between the celestial abode and the earthly domain. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells the Malachim, come. He enfranchises the Malachim in this process as well. Obviously, if you don't have Torah Shabbat Peh, we have Torah Shebaal Peh. So, and of course, there's no Rashi yet. But Rashi, remember, Rashi didn't make this up. Rashi quoted from the Old Tradition from Torah Shebaal Peh. So they changed it to E'ese Adam. I will make man B'tzelem u'bidemus, in the image and in the form. Vayichal b'yom hashishi, vayishbos b'yom hashi. Remember, the pasuk says, Vayichal Elokim b'yom hashvi'i. It says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu stopped creating on the seventh day. Now, both sides, you could very easily misunderstand. When it says that God stopped creating on the seventh day, what it could sound like is what? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu worked into the seventh day and stopped on the seventh day itself. Now remember, the Gemara tells us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is able to do something that man is not able to do. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is able to be mavchin bein dako ledako. God is able to differentiate between moment to moment. And so what it means that he stopped on the seventh day, it literally means that what? He stopped, meaning many people actually try this on Erev Shabbos, right? To actually stop at the very moment in which Shabbos begins. But again, it does not work. It does not work. Don't try that. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu could do it. That's what it means when it says, Vayichal Elokim b'yom hashvi'i. He literally stopped, punkt, at the beginning of the seventh day. But again, in order to avoid any type of misimpression that HaKadosh Baruch Hu worked onto the seventh, what does the pasuk say? Elokim bara, excuse me, I'm sorry. He stopped on the sixth, Vayishbos by Mashvi'i, and he rested on the seventh. Next, Zachar Unakeva Bira'o, Velokasa Bira'am. The pasuk says, Zachar Unakeva Bira'am. He created them, male and female. Now, the problem with that is, again, so Torah Shebaal Peh indicates, gives us a couple of different interpretations, but an erroneous reading could indicate that he created two beings, both of whom were male and female. In order to avoid that misimpression, it just says Zachar and Nekeva Bira'o. He created it, Zachar and Nekeva. Hava Erda Va'avala Sam Shvasam. So again, I'm both saying this is like the same as As Naase Adam, this is by the Dor HaMabul, or I should say the Dor HaFlaga, excuse me, the generation of the dispersion, where God wanted to mix up their languages. So again, the Torah says, Havanerda, let us go down, plural. So again, Rashi comments according to Rosh HaBapeh, it refers to God and his Beis Din. They're obviously not learning Torah HaBapeh, so therefore they phrase it in the singular, let I will go down and mix up their languages. Vatitzchach Sarah Bikroveha, remember the Pasuk says, Vatitzchach Sarah Bikirba. Sarah laughed at her insides, at her womb. This is after she overhears the Malachim telling Avraham Avinu that she's going to have a child. Remember, HaKadosh Baruch Hu rebukes Sarah Imenu for laughing at this news. The problem is, Avram also laughed at the news. So if Talmud would look at this, he would say, God is a misogynist, right? Why is he punishing? Why is he punishing Sarah, but he's not punishing Abraham? So therefore, again, the reason Abbas, I remember we know, is there was a major distinction. Avram Avinu laughed a laugh of joy. Sarah Imenu laughed a laugh of disbelief. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu rebuked Sarah Imenu, because how can you laugh a laugh? HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells you something, anything is possible. So therefore, they changed it. Vatitzchak Sarah Bikroveha. Sarah laughed among her relatives, which means that Sarah voiced her disbelief in public versus Avraham Avinu, who kept his disbelief private. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu rebuked. Ki ba'apam hargu shar ubirtzonam akru avus. So Rabosai, again, the Pasuk says, the Pasuk literally in Vayechi says, ki ba'apam hargu ish ubirtzonam ikru shar. With their anger, they killed a man. And with their will, they uprooted an ox. So they both say the fear was that Talmi would think that Yaakov was saying to Shimon and Levi, Kiba apam hargu ish, that he was accusing them of trying to kill him. Now, obviously, that's not what Yaakov Avinu was referring to. He was referring ultimately to Shechem. But they didn't. But again, with that, you need Torah Shabbat to tell you that. So it looks like Yaakov is accusing them of trying to kill him. Therefore, he changes the pasuk, Kiba apam hargu. Sure, with their anger, they killed Aksin obirtam ikrum avos. Avos is like a manger. So Vayikach Moshe's Ishto Vespanav Yarkivim Al Nosei Bnei Adam. Listen to this. So remember, this is when Moshe Rabbeinu is taking his family down to Mitzrayim. Remember, they never actually make it down to Mitzrayim because they turn back, but they're going down to Mitzrayim, and it says that he took them on the chamor. He took them on the donkey. And Rabbeinu say, this was an incredible lack of covet for the first family, that they're going down to Egypt on a fashnunk in a donkey, right? So what happens? So therefore, again, they changed the pasuk that Moshe Rabbeinu took his family, his wife and his family, on Nosei Bnei Adam. Nosei Bnei Adam literally means on a man carrier. It's actually refers to a camel. Also, apparently, I guess in biblical times, like, if you had a camel, mamish, like, you know, that was like the Lexus. You know, you had a camel, then you've made it. Donkey, it got a broken down, you know, yeshivish station wagon. You know, so that's not very bakavadik. So he went down again, he went out on the camel. Umosha of Bnei Yisrael, Shayeshu of Mitzrayim, Shabrasos, Arba Me'o Shana. Rabosei, this is very interesting. Remember, the pasuk we have in our Torah says, Umosha of Bnei Yisrael, Shayeshu of Mitzrayim, the Torah says, 400 years. So the Torah says that we were in Mitzrayim 400 years. Now, we were not in Mitzrayim for 400 years. We were in Mitzrayim for 210 years. But we know that the calculation actually begins when? With the birth of Yitzchak Avinu. But again, that's Torah Shebaal Peh. So instead, what did they change the Pasuk to? They changed the Pasuk that the dwelling time that we lived in Egypt and other lands was 400 years. Now, what does it mean, other lands? When Yitzchak Avinu was born, Yitzchak is born where? In Eretz Plishtim. It becomes part of Eretz Yisrael later on, but it's Eretz Plishtim. So ultimately, again, that we begin to count from the birth of Yitzchak, when Avraham Avinu was already living in other lands, 400 years, okay? Vayishlach es za'atutei b'nei Yisrael. Bosa, this is by Har Sinai. So the Torah says, Vayishlach es na'are b'nei Yisrael vayalu olos. That Moshe Avinu sent na'are, the lads. Now, I will say, lads seems to be a non-chashiv people, unimportant people. Now, the truth is, again, the lads in this context happens to mean what? Happens to be, again, the young men who were of importance, Dak Shevet Levi. But again, in order that Talmi should not think that we disrespected the Sinaitic revelation, they changed it. The Bechorim, correct. So he said, therefore they changed it to the word Za'atute. Za'atute means nobleman. Nobleman. And now once they changed it there, Ve'al Za'atute b'nei Yisrael lo shalach yado. So again, in that pasuk, the Torah uses the Lashon of Atzile. So Atzile, once again, is not the most Bakavadic Lashon, so they changed it to Za'atute. Lo chamad me'echad meham nasas. You know, I will say, this is where Moshe Rabbeinu This is where Moshe Rabbeinu, this is by Parshas Korach, right? Where again, by the rebellion of Korach, Moshe Rabbeinu loses it a little bit. And he says, Lo chamor echa mehem nasasi. You know, I've taken nothing from them. I haven't even taken a donkey. So interestingly enough, what the Rabbanon were afraid about was that Talmi would say, oh, he never took a donkey. But who knows what else he took? Shkoyach, I never took a donkey. Maybe you took this, maybe you took that. So they changed it from chamor to chamad, right? I never took one possession. I never took one item. I never took a something from them. Asher chalak Hashem lokecha osam lahayir lechala amim. Now, it's very interesting. This is by the pasuk says, "Upentisa inecha shamayma." You'll lift up your eyes to the heavens. V'ra'isa as Hashem shaseyareach v'eskochavim kol tzva shamayim. You'll see the sun, the moon, the stars, all the hosts of the heaven. V'nidachlu v'shtachavisa lahem v'avaratam asher chalak Hashem lokecha osam lechala amim tachas kol shamayim. You'll worship them. Those things that Hakadosh Baruch Hu has given over to the nation, asher chalak Hashem lokecha osam lechala amim tachas hashamayim. Those things that God has given to the nations underneath the sun. Now, you could erroneously read that pasuk and say, what the pasuk is saying is, Kadosh Baruch Hu saying to us, you're not allowed to worship the sun, the moon, and the stars, but the nations are. God is not saying that. Therefore, they changed it. Asher chalak Hashem Elokecha osam lahair lechala amim. God has given the sun, the moon, and the stars to what? To provide light for all of the nations. Okay? Vayelech vayavod. Elohim acherim, asher lo tzivisi la'avdam. So again, the pasuk says over here, vayelech vayavot Elohim acherim vayishtachu lahem la'shemesh o la'yareach o l'chol tzva ha'shamayim asher lo tzivisi. Therefore, they change it just simply, vayavot Elohim acherim, that I have not commanded them to go ahead and worship. If you look at Rashi, Rashi says Shem lo kasvu la'avdam. Had they not added in the word to serve them, Mashra shalot tzivisi sheyihu. You could have misinterpreted the pasuk to say that they were worshiping gods that I did not will into existence. They came into existence on their own. Therefore, in order to avoid any misimpression that there are other gods who willed themselves into existence, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they added in the word la'avdam, to serve. This last one is very interesting. V'kasvulo es tziras haraglayim v'lo kasvulo es ha'arneves. Now, when the Torah speaks about the non-kosher animals, so one of the non-kosher animals that's listed is arneves. Now, we translate arneves as how?
Rabbit.
Right, either rabbit or hare. Right, rabbit or hare. So, interesting, they did not use the word arneves. Why not? It's very interesting. Mipnei she'ishto shel Talmai arneves shma. Mrs. Talmai's name was arneves. Now, Rabosa, you could imagine, again, if they translated that arneves is not a kosher animal, that was not going to bode well for the Jews under Greek occupation. And therefore, again, they decided to call it the short-legged animal. Right? They decided, you know what? First of all, better maybe we shouldn't give it any name, because maybe it's going to be someone's wife. Right? So therefore, I'll just call it the short-legged animal. Shelo yomar, Talmi should not say, sachaku bihayudim. Talmi shouldn't say that. What? Other Jews are making fun of me. Ve'etilu shem ishti b'torah. And they're going to end up saying what? He's going to say that they put my wife's name in the Torah. Okay. Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer af bistrom lo tiru sheikh tov elivan. So Rabbi Simon, Rav Shimon Gamliel argued on the Tanakama. Tanakama in the Mishnah said that you could translate Svarim into any language. Rav Shimon Gamliel said it's not true. The most you could do is you could translate it into Greek. Am Rabbi Avo, Am Rabbi Yochanan, halak Rav Shimon Gamliel. Rabbi Avosin, Rabbi Yochanan, that the halach falls from Shimon Gamliel. But I'm Rabbi Yochanan, my time of Shimon Gamliel. Why? What's the logic between Shimon Gamliel? That Shimon Gamliel holds that you could only translate, Svarim into Greek, to which the Gemara says, Amr Krak, as the pasuk says, Yaft Elokim Liyafes, the Yishkon Ba'oale Shem. Literally, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take the beauty of Yefes and it will dwell in the tents of Shem. Now remember again, Abba say, we are the descendants of Shem. Greece is the descendants of Yefes. So I will take the beauty of Yefes, which refers in this context to the Greek language, and I will allow it to go ahead and dwell in the tents of Shem, which is the tents of Torah. So the Gemara says, one second. First of all, Ve'ema Gomer Amogog, how do you know that the descendants of Yefes in this case refer to Greece? Maybe it refers to Gomeru Mogog, some other nations. That's the positive news, and it says the beauty of Yefes, Yaf Yuso Shal Yefes, Yuba'ol Eshem. The greatest beauty that Yefes has to offer, which is interesting from the Judaic perspective, that we saw the beauty in the Greek language and even in parts of the Greek culture. that seems to be the most beautiful part of Yefes was Greece. And therefore, again, that's why, again, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel allows for the Torah itself, for the Svarim, to be translated into Greek. Now, I will say, how do we paskin with this? So the Rambam in Hilchos Tefillin, this is Rambam in Hilchos Tefillin, Perek Aleph Halacha Yutes says, so first, remember, what everyone agrees with is what? That tefillin and mezuzahs can only be written in Ashuris. So that we're not translating into anything. That's v'hayu, bav yasan yuhu. V'tiru b'sfarim lichtov af b'yavani bilvad. Now, like we said, we pass the Rav Shimon Gamliel, and you're allowed to write svarim, which means scrolls of Torah, scrolls of Nevi'im, scrolls of Ksuvim. You're allowed to write them in Greek as well. However, says the Rambam, ukvar nishka yavani min ha'olam. But that pure form of Greek language, which the Gemara is referring to, that no longer exists. We do not have that ancient Greek anymore. Vinishtabish, that ancient Greek has become corrupted. V'ibeit, and it's in certain respects, parts of it are lost. Lefichach, ein kosvin hayom shlashtan el ashuris. Therefore, says the Rambam, halacha lemaisa, today we do not write scrolls in other languages. Again, so even though technically we paskin like Rav Shimon Gamliel, that again, scrolls of Torah, scrolls of Nevi'im, scrolls of Ksuvim can be written in Greek, lemaisa, because again, that ancient Greek has been lost. Therefore, lemaisa, again, you can only write scrolls in Ashuris, no other language. That obviously doesn't apply to other books. Books obviously can be written in other languages, Dafka scrolls.
So scrolls for reading, for ancient Greek, you could read publicly.
Correct. Reading, learning, correct.
We're still talking about transliterating, right? That what if we had the ancient Greek?
You could use Hebrew letters to write Greek words. Ksavashuris to write Greek words. So you would still be using Hebrew lettering, but you would be reading it the same. Correct. It's the same way like the arts. No. That's the Gemara qualified in Ahmed Aleph. That you could go ahead and use Hebraic letters, but transliterate it again into Greek words.
The relevance is not so much in the actual writing of it. It's in that when we read from the Torah, everybody is Yotzei, the mitzvah of Kriyas Torah. Is that what?
Yeah. Although again, Mr. Chris Torah is the least of it. The idea is that you could have scrolls like this that are used for learning. Learning it. Somebody speaks Greek. I speak Greek. I want to say the Torah in Greek.
One second. Is the problem the writing of it? In other words, is this allowed to be written in this language, the actual writing, or the usage of that?
It's one and the same. I'm saying, obviously, it's usage. You're not writing it just for have it written. You're using it. So again, I want to point out this. Remember, understand, people didn't have Sfarim like this. They learned from scrolls. So the idea is you would have a scroll that was written in Greek that would now allow Torah to be accessible for those Greek-speaking individuals for whom Hebrew was not their first tongue. The same way that we have art scroll, the same way that we have Sfarim that allow us to access Torah, even in languages that are not, even though Aramaic, Hebrew is not our primary language, that's what this allowed for.
Today we are allowed to, why?
No, we don't. We do books. We do books. This is about scrolls. The chilik is because, again, scrolls have a different level of kedusha than ultimately books do. So this only was on scrolls with parchment, with dio, that was licensed. But again, remember, halacha lemaisa, we don't do it today because the only license was for Greek, and that Greek, again, has been forgotten. Says, also, let's go right there. Says the Mishnah. Ein bein koin v'shul. Remember, this is dafyomi. It's dafyomi, all right? So ein bein koin. You're not supposed to understand everything. That's the way it works. Come on. So ein bein koch mashuach v'shem na mishcha. L'merum v'gadah. So we'll say, now we go still with the ein beins. So remember, again, l'maisa, there are two ways in which you could inaugurate the Kohen Gadol. You could inaugurate him v'shem na mishcha with anointing oil, or he could go ahead and put on the vestments of the Kohen Gadol. So there's a two different ways a person can become a Kohen Gadol, either Shemana Mishcha, or actually put on the clothing of the Kohen Gadol himself. Says the Gemara, says the Mishnah. So there's no difference between those two. Ela paraba kol mitzos. Except there will say something called paraba kol mitzos. Paraba kol mitzos means that if the Kohen Gadol rendered a halachic decision that was wrong, and he actually permitted something that for which you would normally be chayiv kares, there was, like, let's say, for example, Kohen Gadol made a mistake, he said you could eat chametz on Pesach. It's erroneous. You could eat chametzah pesach, or you could eat forbidden fats, things that carry with them a penalty of kares. See, it brings a particular type of carbon called a par haba'a kol ha-mitzvos. So only a kohen who was mashuach b'shem ha-mishcha, only a kohen who was anointed with oil, brings that carbon. A kohen who was anointed with begadim does not, when I say anointed with begadim, what that literally means is he puts on the special 8 vestments of the kohen gadol, and that makes him the kohen gadol. Furthermore, again, there is no distinction between a kohen mishamish. Well, like kohen mishamish means an active duty kohen gadol to kohen sha'avar. Kohen sha'avar means that there was always a skan, there was always an assistant kohen gadol. So let's say something happened to the kohen gadol that rendered him unfit to discharge the duties of his office. So the skan, the assistant, became the kohen gadol. Now, when the other kohen gadol is ready to resume his responsibilities, the replacement of the kohen gadol is called the kohen sha'avar. He was the kohen gadol, but he's not the kohen gadol anymore. So there's no distinction between the two of them. Ella par yom kippurim v'asira seifa, except the special par offered on Yom Kippur, which only the active duty kohen gadol could offer, and the asira seifa. The asira seifa means was the mincha offering that the kohen gadol brought every single day. There was only one of those, and therefore, again, only the active duty kohen gadol could bring that. Says the Gemara, halu inyan par yom kippurim v'asira seifa zev zeshav. Now, also getting back to the first case of the Mishnah. The first case of the Mishnah made a distinction between a kohen who was anointed with shemen ha-mishcha versus a kohen who became kohen gadol by putting on the vestments of the kohen gadol. So the Gemara says the Mishnah said the only distinction between them was the par haba'a kol ha-mitzvos. But you see from here that in terms of par yom kippurim, they're both able to offer up the special par on Yom Kippur and the asira sa'ifa and the daily offering. Now, also remember again, there's only one of these. Remember, right? There's only one kohen gadol. What the Gemara is pointing out over here is whether he became the kohen gadol through shemen ha-mishcha, or whether he became the kohen gadol through putting on the kohanic vestments. Either way, however he became the kohen gadol, that kohen is able to offer the special par of the kohen gadol on Yom Kippur, and is able to offer the daily kohanic kohen gadol mincha offering. Masnis lo k'Rabbi Meir. So our Mishnah seems not to reflect the view of Rabbi Meir. Why? Dik Rabbi Meir, because if it's like Rabbi Meir said, Meruma begadim, mevi par abba'a kol ha-mitzvos. Rabbi Meir, because most Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that what? That even a kohen who becomes the kohen gadol, how? Through putting on the kohanic vestments, has the ability to bring the par haba'a kol ha-mitzvos, that if he issues a ruling, an erroneous ruling, that permitted a otherwise kares-bearing prohibition, that he is able to bring that particular carbon. So it's, that contradicts our Mishnah. The chachamim say, eino maybe. The chachamim say, no, the only kohen gadol is able to bring a par haba'a kol ha-mitzvos. Is what kind of kohen gadol? A kohen gadol was anointed with shemen ha-mishcha. But another kohen gadol who was meruba begadim cannot. So Gemara says, my time is Rabbi Meir. What is Rabbi Meir's logic? Tisanya, Mashiach. Because the Pasuk says, Ima koin hamashiach yecheta. When speaking about this par haba kol ha-mitzvos, the Torah says if the anointed kohen will make a mistake. So what do you see from your Mashiach? Ein li ela mashuach b'shemen ha-mishcha. I only know that this is true with a kohen who is anointed with oil. Miruma bebegadim, miruma bebegadim minayim. How do I know that even a kohen who became kohen gadol hal through the wearing of the kohanic vestments also has the ability to bring this par? Talmud lomar hamashiach. Therefore, again, the Torah adds in that extra hay to be more inclusive of not just the kohen who was anointed with oil, but what else? The kohen who was, we'll call it, anointed with clothing as well. B'mayu kimna, d'lok Rav Meir. So therefore, you're saying our Mishnah does not reflect the view of Rav Meir. Because we both say, right? Remember again, our Mishnah says that only a kohen who was anointed with oil could bring the par haba'a kol ha-mitzvos, but a kohen anointed with clothing cannot bring the par haba'a kol ha-mitzvos. Rav Meir says that whether you're anointed with oil or anointed with clothing, you can bring the par haba'a kol ha-mitzvos. Therefore, our Mishnah does not reflect the view of Rabbi Meir. So the Marcus Amos said, but look at the end of the Mishnah. Ein bein kohen mashamish lekohen sha'avar. But yet, what did the end of the Mishnah say? That a kohen mishamish, right, an active duty kohen, there is no distinction between an active duty kohen and a kohen who served in the capacity of kohen gadol, but is no longer kohen gadol. Ela par yom kippurim v'asira sa'ifa. Except that, remember again, it's only the active duty kohen who could bring the par yom kippur and the daily mincha offering. Haluchol divrayen ze v'ze shavin. But yet in every other matter, they are the same. Now, I will say what this also means is that l'maisa, according to this approach, even the Kohen Sha'avar, when he does the Avoda in the Beis HaMikdash, he does the Avoda with the big day Kohen Gadol. Right? In every other way, they're the same, except for these two details. Who does that go to? Who does that go according to? Asan Rabbi Meir. That goes according to Rabbi Meir. This time we learned in a Braisa. Irabo Psul, if you have a Kohen Gadol, if something happened to the Kohen Gadol, Umino Kohen Acher Tachtov, and they appointed another Kohen Gadol in his stead, Rishon Chozer La'avodah. So we'll say what happens. So let's say again, let's say Kohen Gadol gets a mum. He gets a mum. Okay, and now what happens? So when he has a mum, he can't serve. The assistant Kohen Gadol steps in and he becomes a regular Kohen Gadol. Now the mum goes away. What happens when the mum goes away? Original Kohen Gadol goes back to his position. Chozer La'avodoso. Sheni kol mitzvas kohuna gedola alav the Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir says that the second one, now remember this, was the replacement Kohen Gadol, who is now not the active duty Kohen Gadol, but Rabbi Meir says what? Essentially, he's still like a Kohen Gadol in every regard. Namely that what? When he does the avoda, he does it with the special garments of the Kohen Gadol. He's only allowed to marry a besula. He's not permitted to become tame even for his father, his mother, his brother, his sister, his son, his daughter, his wife. Okay. He's like a Kohen Gadol essentially in every regard. The only distinction is almost like that there are some things that you could only offer one of. So you can only offer one minchas chavitin, one daily Kohen Gadol mincha offering. So then obviously he's going to be offered by the active Kohen Gadol. But if this Kohen Gadol sha'avar, he's still treating that Kohen Gadol in every other way. Rabbi Yossi says, no. Rishon Chozer La'avodaso. When let's say the mum goes away, the first Kohen Gadol returns back to his position. Listen to this. Sheni eno ro'i lola Kohen Gadol v'lola Kohen Hetziot. And the replacement one, Rabosai, who is now displaced, he's kind of nishtahair. He can't, he's actually not anything. Why? Listen to this, Rabosai, we'll explain the why in just a moment. But Rabbi Yossi, Mais Rabbi Yossi ben Ula Mitzipori. There was a story, this happened with Rabbi Yossi of Tzipori, She'ira bo psul b'Kohen Gadol. It happened that the Kohen Gadol became invalidated. He couldn't go ahead and do the avoda. Uminuhu, and Rabbi Yossi ben Ulam apparently was the skan, he was the assistant. Uminuhu tachtov. They went ahead and they appointed Rabbi Yossi ben Ulam to be the replacement Kohen Gadol. And what happened? I will say, again, the Gemara doesn't say this. What happened? Then the previous Kohen Gadol, the mum went away. He was able to resume his duties. And now the Shaila was what? What do you do with Rabbi Yosef ben Ulam? What do you do with him now? Right now, what's his status? Uba ma'aslefein chachamim. And the ma'aslef came before the chachamim. And they said, va'amru, rishon chozer la'avodasom. When the first Kohen Gadol, when his mum goes away, he goes back to work as the Kohen Gadol. Sheni, eno ro'oi lo l'Kohen Gadol, lo l'Kohen Hedjot. Rabbi Yosef ben Ulam, who was the replacement Kohen Gadol, he can't do anything. He can't be a regular Kohen, he can't be the Kohen Gadol. Kohen Gadol Mishum Eva, listen to this. He can't be the Kohen Gadol, you know why? Why? Mikol Eva. We'll say, what does Eva mean? Animosity. People are people. People are people. And you can't have two Kohanim Gidolim in the same way that you can't have two kings. I was going to say you can't have two rabbis, but everybody's a rabbi. Right? So again, you know, there needs, in hierarchies, there needs to be one person at the top. And if you go ahead and you try to create two side-by-side positions, you're going to create animosity, angst, and anxiety. Therefore, it's not a good idea. You can't have two. Remember what Rabbi Meir was advocating was essentially two Kohanim Gidolim, right? Again, remember, there are certain things that you could only have one of, so only one Minchas Chavitin, only one Parv Yom Kippur, but essentially you have two side-by-side Kohanim Gidolim. The Rabban Chum said, no, you can't have that. There's one Kohen Gadol, Shum Eva, so therefore, again, Rav Yosef and Ulam, sorry, you can't be the Kohen Gadol, you're also Kohen Hedjot, you also can't go back to being a regular Kohen, why not? Mishum Ma'alin Bakodesh V'lo Moridin. Why? Because once you've served in the capacity as the Kohen Gadol, then what? Then you can't go back to being a regular Kohen.
He's going back to.
So essentially, it's not essentially what he is. He's kind of like in suspended animation. We don't. You're right. Yaakov's saying good. At the end of the day, you actually seem to relegate him to less of a position. But essentially, what we're saying is that shevi al tasa. We're not doing anything. Emeritus, right? Like most emeritus positions, you're just gonna sit there. You're in the coin. The coin parade. You know, every two ba'av. You know, but essentially it's nothing. So Moshe says the Gemara. So therefore, what do you see from here? You see from here, Reisha Rabbanan, see from Amir. So Moshe, here's what's interesting. So now, Now, what you're saying is like this, that Lemaisa, we've demonstrated that the beginning of the Mishnah reflects the view of Rabbi Meir. Because Rabbi Meir was the one who said that only a Kohen who was anointed with oil has the ability to bring the par haba'a kol ha-mitzos. That only a Kohen Gadol was anointed with oil, if he rules erroneously on a kares-bearing prohibition, brings that special carbon. A Kohen who was anointed with clothing does not bring that carbon. So the Reish at the beginning of the Mishnah reflects the view of Rabbi Meir, but the end of the Mishnah reflects the view of the Rabbanon. Because remember, according to Rabbi Meir, when you had a replacement Kohen Gadol and then he was displaced, so he continues to serve function as a Kohen Gadol. Our Mishnah does not reflect that view. Our Mishnah reflects the view of the Rabbanon. That's what? That as soon as the first Kohen Gadol is ready to resume his responsibilities, what happens to the replacement Kohen Gadol? What happens to him? What happens to him? Essentially, he remains in this strange state where he's not a Kohen Gadol anymore, but he's also not a Kohen Hagiot. So the Gemara points out over here, it's strange, the Mishnah, the Reisha, the first part of the Mishnah goes according to Rabbi Meir, and the second part of the Mishnah goes according to the Rabbanan, not like Rabbi Meir. And the Rabbanan say, in general, the way we like to structure Mishnayos is we like to assume that Mishnayos are reflective of one view from beginning to end. So the Gemara sees this as a kasha, that the beginning of the Mishnah reflects the view of Rabbi Meir, but yet the second part of the Mishnah reflects the view of the Rabbanan, to which the Gemara says, Rav Yosef says, Rabbi he, the truth is no, our Mishnah reflects the view of Rabbi, of Rabbi Huda Hanasi. And what does Rabbi do? I skipped something over here. I said that just the opposite. The Reisha is the Rabbanan, because I'm sorry. According to Rabbi Meir holds that a Kohen Gadol, whether he was anointed with oil or with clothing, could bring the par haba kol ha-mitzvos. So therefore, again, Lemaisa, we pass in like the Rabbanan, that is only a Kohen that was anointed with oil who could bring the par haba kol ha-mitzvos, be at the safe as Rabbi Meir. Rav Chisda says, in Reish Rabbanon, Sefer Rabbi Meir. Rav Chisda says, correct, that even though, yes, we like to try to have a Mishnah that reflects one view from beginning to end, when that's not possible, it's simply not possible. Rav Yosef gives a different answer. Rav Yosef says the Mishnah does reflect one view from the beginning to the end. And what's that view? That view is the opinion of Rebbe. Rebbe is the author of our Mishnah, Rebbe Yehuda Nasi. And what does Rebbe do? The Rebbe Nasiv Le Aliba De Tanoi. Rabbi say, what Rebbe does in the formulation of halacha is what? He picks and chooses different opinions from different places. Therefore, Lemaisa, again, the Mishnah does reflect one cohesive view. It's the view of Rebbe. But Rebbe calls his individual view from different opinions expressed in the sugya. So Rabbi say, what comes out? Over here, at Halacha Lemaisa, we paskin like the view of Rebbe, as the Rambam paskin is like the view of Rebbe, as expressed in the Mishnah, namely that a Kohen Gadol could become a Kohen Gadol in one of two ways, either again through anointing oil or through clothing. And the truth is, he is the Kohen Gadol in both of those situations, with one exception. We paskin like Rebbe's opinion, namely that only a Kohen who was anointed with oil could bring the special carbon of par haba'a kol ha-mitzvos. Only a Kohen anointed with oil, if he rendered an erroneous halachic decision and he permitted something that was normally usher through kares, only a Kohen anointed with oil brings that carbon. Why? Because the pasuk itself says Hamashiach, the anointed one. A Kohen who is anointed with clothing would not bring that carbon. So that's paskin number one. Number two, Rabosai, we paskin halacha lemaisa, that when the replacement Kohen, so first of all, two things. First of all, number one is that the replacement Kohen, Lemaisa, again, once he is replaced, he serves in the capacity until the previous Kohen Gadol is ready to resume his responsibilities. Once the previous Kohen Gadol is ready to resume his responsibilities, what is the status of the replacement? We paskin again, he cannot be the Kohen Gadol. Why? Why? He cannot function in the capacity as the Kohen Gadol, Mishum Eva, because of animosity, but he also can't go back to being a Kohen Hedyot because of Ma'alin B'Kodesh Ve'in Moridin. So essentially, again, he's kind of relegated to this status where essentially he can't really do anything. Maybe he'll get Piskal in residence circuit. I don't know. But again, but Lamaisi, he can't do the Avoda of a Kohen Hedyot, and he can't do the Avoda of a Kohen Gadol. Rabosai, we're going to start tomorrow morning at 5:45. We're going to start early because it's a long daf tomorrow morning. Mr. Martyr, I'm sorry, what did you say?